everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is episode number, I absolutely know what number it is. It's number 170. We're in August 2021. COVID is still not gone, apparently. And we have a lot of other things to talk about. My name is Patrick Beja, and on this show, we cover the news from around the world with people from around the world. Imagine that. And we get their take on what's been happening in their neck of the woods, and how the news has been reported on, essentially, is the angle we try to take. But really, it's like our impressions on how things have been going and how it's interpreted in our part of the world as opposed to maybe your part of the world. And hopefully that gives a little bit of a different view on those same topics. However, I do believe that we're going to have a somehow uniform view of things this episode. As I said, I'm Patrick Beja. I am in Finland currently, but I'm also French, so I follow the news from there. And I'm very happy to welcome back Matthias to the show. How is it going, Matthias, from Germany?
Hello, Patrick. Did you know the meme of the dog sitting in a burning room saying, "This is fine"? Because this is how I've been feeling for the last few months. So to answer your question, it's going fine. Thank you.
Well, I might have, at least on some of the topics we're going to cover, a little bit. I'm trying to look out for the positive aspects of things. So we'll see if I manage to, you know, maybe douse down the fire a little bit in your room where it's fine. And I'm also very happy to welcome back someone who has evidently been on the show before, but it's been so long, I didn't even remember. John Beck is with us. How's it going, John?
I'm doing well, Patrick. Thank you for not remembering me.
I remember you very well. I just don't, you know, yeah. Everything before my first child was born is essentially non-existent. So that's the excuse I'm going to take.
And to give you any sort of credit, it was in the aughts that we actually right. did any podcasting together. So it's been quite some time.
And you're based in the U.S. on the East Coast.
About as west of the East on the East Coast as you can get. I'm in the Pittsburgh area.
Okay, so Western East Coast is how we're gonna coin it. We're just going to jump in. Thank you very much, John, for being on. And of course, thank you, Matthias, for being on again. I think there are really two topics that kind of make sense to cover from a worldwide point of view, and that's COVID and Afghanistan. And I'm going to try and, as I said, give you a somewhat positive outlook on what's happening on the COVID front. I think it's not really useful to remind everyone what's been happening. Essentially, it is encompassed in the meme, "My full plans," with a picture on one side, and then the Delta variant with another picture, much more dramatic, on the other side, the meme that's been going around. I'm guessing this summarizes the situation for everyone. I'm going to ask John first, but I'm sure I know what the answer is.
I feel like I've had like the best and worst few years of my life. Like, there's so many things that were beneficial of the past year or so, and so many things that were horrible. Mental health is really not great. Yeah. I mean, on a serious note, we just found out my 81-year-old mother-in-law, who is vaccinated, has COVID. Oh. It seems to be knock on. I was gonna say wood. I was like bamboo. Oh no, bamboo's wood, right?
Yeah. I'm knocking on wood for you, so you're good.
Thank you. She's like got a lot of congestion, but her blood pressure issues and her fever issues seem to have come down quickly. So I'm hoping that, you know, the what seems to be happening, and that if you do happen to get COVID with the vaccine, that it is much less intense. We're just crossing our fingers that that is how it's going to end up for her. But it was literally like in the last 2 days that this happened.
Wow. Okay. Well, so this kind of leads me into my positive view on everything, which I'll make a note here that Matthias, when I talked to him for being on the show a few days ago last week, he was like, you know, if you're not feeling great, because I had been complaining on Twitter that I'm, you know, not feeling great about many things and I don't sleep because I have two small children and all of that. He was like, well, maybe you shouldn't do the show because everything is horrible. Or, I'm sorry, everything's fine.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Was I supposed to make you feel better?
No,
I was only trying to say that if you invite me on the show, I might have not anything positive to say because everything is fine.
Yes, right. I agree. But the thing is, if that is the approach I take to the show, then I might as well stop the show because it's, you know, it's always fine. Everything's fine. But yeah, no, I thank you and everyone who's been answering my distressed tweets, with nothing but kindness and looking out for me. But yeah, the reason I think things aren't as bad as, we get the impression is that, you know, we, as the collective we of humanity, developed the vaccine in record time. And this is a vaccine, a type of vaccine, the mRNA vaccine, that can be replicated for other viruses and certainly other variants very, very quickly, much quicker than the traditional type of vaccine, which require, you know, I'm not a doctor or researcher, but it's much quicker to do that. They're even testing this type of vaccine for AIDS, which is, you know, as a person who grew up in the 80s and 90s, completely mind-blowing. Like, the idea that we could have a vaccine against AIDS, a vaccine for AIDS, is like, it's like you're talking about a parallel universe in the Marvel, you know, universe or something. It's like, no, this is not our world. That cannot happen. It cannot exist. So already the fact that this technology came to fruition at the right time now is incredible. And the second part of this is, especially with the Delta variant, imagine if we hadn't had this vaccine, if we hadn't gotten it as quickly as we did. Now, essentially, what the Delta variant means is we're continuing more or less how we have been doing in the past year, which admittedly is not great. But if we hadn't had the vaccine, it would have been like the kind of pandemic that we imagine in movies. It's so contagious and so much worse that, as you said, John, it at least mitigates the symptoms and the severity of the illness, on top of potentially protecting you more than, you know, obviously more than if you didn't have a vaccine. So I really think there's a silver lining that is not even just a silver lining. We're actually, as bad as the situation is, I think we're actually kind of the glass half empty way of seeing it is we're avoiding the worst, but I think we're being saved because the Delta variant, and maybe another variant, is going to show up at some point, and it's going to take a few months to develop a new vaccine that works against that, if it is too potent or if it evades the current protections. But it's like this is what kind of winning against such a horrendous pandemic looks like. Herd immunity might not be achievable anymore because of the Delta variant, or not in the short term, but the protections that were afforded by this vaccine are very easy to understate, I feel. And that's a fault of our, that creates a lot of mental anguish. And of course, you know, that consideration doesn't necessarily help the people who are in very dire situation. And certainly, John, I would pray for your mother-in-law if I was, I'm sending a lot of good thoughts, but
yep.
It's, you know, it doesn't help the people who are in difficult situations, but I think it's also important to not forget about that aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, you know, I know Like, I believe the vaccine is doing great. I think, I know that there's the that insurmountable, not insurmountable, but there's that, the Delta variant is what it is, right? It's as bad as it is. And yeah, we wouldn't be nearly as, we'd be much worse if we didn't have the vaccines. But how much of it, the badness is the other side of the sort of polarizing view of science right now, and I don't know. I'd love to hear from, you know, the two of you from outside of the United States of how polarized is it there as compared to the United States, where half the country thinks the vaccines are evil.
I was about to ask if I'm allowed to throw a wrench in your argument there, Patrick, because it seems like a reoccurring theme for a lot of countries that the vaccination campaigns are now slowing down, and that a lot of people are opposed to taking the vaccine, not only to protect themselves, but also to protect others who can't get the vaccine for medical reasons, for example, or all the children who the vaccine is not... there's not enough research on children to allow them to get vaccinated, fully tested. So at least for us in Germany, it seems we're stuck around the 60% fully vaccination number, and the rest of the country says nope, not getting it. Screw you, I'm not getting it.
Really, that's surprising. You know, in Germany, it seems now you're at 64 fully vaccinated, at least one dose. So, and it has been tapering off. In France, there are, you know, like demonstrations against the vaccine and stuff like that. But we are at 70% with one dose, and it's slowed down a little bit, but it's not stopped. But there are, like, you know, 200,000 people in the streets every weekend saying we don't want the vaccine and we don't want the essentially health pass, which is a thing you have to show when you go in an enclosed space to show that you're either vaccinated or you've had a recent test. But I think the way I look at it, at least in France, and it was, you know, pretty horrendous the way people reacted to all of this once we got the vaccine. I have to say, the thing I didn't see coming was that, you know, I've been tweeting about this, the magical cure, which is obviously not magical, like it's a lot of hard work, but we have a tool to defeat it. And it's incredibly simple, incredibly efficient. And the thing I didn't see coming was people saying, nope, I don't want it. It's like, okay, you have a 50% chance of getting the thing and then, you know, good chance of dying if you do. Yeah, but I don't want it. And that I did not... It didn't enter my consciousness. And before the Delta variant, it wasn't as bad that people didn't want it because we had a way of mitigating it. But the Delta variant changes all that. Like, we need to vaccinate everyone, I think. Like, if tomorrow governments were to announce, okay, well, party's over, everyone has to get vaccinated. I was hesitant before because I would think, you know, how do you actually implement that? Like, do you get people by force, you know, with a jab in their, like, go get them in their houses? Like, that's not practical, obviously. But I think now I'm thinking, well, yeah, now we need to. We don't need to go and get them in their houses, but at least get the vaccine mandatory maybe at some point. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. In France, we've been, as I was saying, having a lot of demonstrations against it. But when we say a lot, it's like 200,000 people in the street, maybe, you know, 3, 4, 5 times as many actually don't want the vaccine. That's 1 million people as opposed to, you know, in a population of 70 million. So I think it's very easy to get a distorted view of that and think that, oh, half the people don't want it, when it's a smaller minority. But looking at the numbers in the US and in Germany, it certainly has been slowing down significantly, it seems. So I don't know.
I can only talk for Germany in this case, but even before COVID even was a thing, the number of anti-vaxxers or people critical to vaccinations has been rising over the last decade or so. For example, measles is something you can easily vaccinate against, but for some reason, a lot of parents decide, no, we don't want to our children to have a vaccination against the measles in the last few years with like these crazy ideas. We do a measles party. So one child has measles. We all get them together, get them all infected so they may have the illness, and then we don't need to vaccinate them. Like those crazy ideas have been on the rise for a few years.
But that
years
has
now.
To be anecdotal, right? That has to be, you know, a handful of crazies. That you always have crazies for everything. Like there are people who believe the earth is flat, like genuinely believe the earth is flat. So if you're going
to look for these. Right, it went from crazies to a movement. Mm. Like, you know, you have, you know, it was like, God, I don't even just 5 years ago, it feels like anti-vaxxers was like an incredibly small minority of people. You know, you've got a couple celebrities and everyone was like, no, they're nuts. And now I feel like it's sort of backdoored into this through the anti-masking movement and now into anti-vaccinations. And it's just huge. And there's lots of reasons, but it clearly is nothing. I mean, obviously it's fear-based, but it's political and it's not actually backed by anything, because as even now, the vaccines have been FDA approved in the United States. The reasoning why, which used to be, well, it's not FDA approved, so it can't be safe. Now that it's quote unquote safe, they've moved the goalpost, and it's a different reason now. So it is much more than anti-vaccination itself. I feel like it is a movement of people who that is a sort of tool of like anti-government, basically don't change my life, even though, sorry, reality is changing.
And just to answer your question, Patrick, that those parties may be anecdotally, although I've heard a lot that a certain cities are, or parts of certain cities like Berlin are famous for the alternative lifestyle, eco crazy parents who do this. But at least for the number of vaccinations and on measles, there are statistics that clearly show that the number of people vaccinated against measles is declining. Mm-hmm. And a few years back, there was an urgent call from the government or health officials who say, we're dipping below the herd immunity level. We are in clear danger of getting back the measles if we don't counter this not getting vaccinated trend. So at least that one is not anecdotal.
Well, I think we'll see what happens in the fall and when we get them. I don't know. You've managed to set me back a little bit in my
Wait, Patrick. what blessing has come to your life out of the changes that the pandemic has wrought?
Well, my life hasn't changed a lot. I already live like a hermit in the middle of the forest. So I guess everyone knows what it is to live like me now. I don't know, but I'm happy. You know, I don't like people. I often say I'm happy living away from everyone. So blessings, honestly, I wouldn't go as far as to say that there are blessings. It's mostly not great things.
Silver linings, whatever.
Well, I think the mRNA technology, the advancement there, it's not a blessing, obviously, because it's fighting the thing that we need to fight. But the vaccines, even with people who don't get vaccinated, and even with the fact that herd immunity might be unattainable now, we still have the vaccine, which protects us from that pandemic. You know, as bad as things are, if we didn't have the vaccine, it would be obviously, you know, with the contagion levels of the Delta variant, we would all have we would all be sick, right? It would have spread already through the whole world. And now we're still at levels that are manageable. And what we're looking at, even with the people who don't want to get vaccinated, is enough people are, and I'm sure it will continue, hopefully, enough people are that the progression of the pandemic has slowed down a little bit. And even if if COVID is there to stay, hospitals have the bandwidth to deal with the extreme cases because they're less numerous and less severe in many cases. So I'm still somewhat a little bit maybe optimistic, I think.
Here's my silver lining. I think the one big thing that has come out of it, this has been the cultural conversation around mental health has taken a huge leap forward. Obviously still not where I want it to be, but I feel like we've never been closer to really battling the stigma around mental health and getting people to just have a conversation about it, because everybody is learning what many people feel like on a day-to-day basis because of the isolation and everything that they've been going through.
I have to say, that's something that seems, I see a lot in English-speaking circles in the US especially, but not as much in France. Mental health is still like, we don't even, like the term mental health in French would be santé mentale, which has a connotation of craziness, you know, like that kind of thing. And it's funny, I did an editorial for my French shows just a few days ago talking about the challenges of, you know, that other meme of waves like all around to all of this, like the challenges of all of this and having children and the job that being an independent, you don't have, you know, you don't stop, you don't have paid time off, stuff like that. And I was talking about mental health, and that's what I was talking about. It was like, in France, we don't really talk about it. Like, it's not a topic of conversation. So I feel like in that aspect, the US is a little bit more advanced than we are at this stage. But things are changing here as well.
Let me ask a question, though. If people are talking more about it, if it's more visible to the public, is there also enough help for people who seek help? Does your healthcare system
That's a trap. I mean, that's obviously a trick question.
The healthcare system hasn't changed, obviously, right?
No, that's not a trick question, because I was going to say there has been a lot of talk in Germany about this as well. But even if you recognize, yes, I am depressed, I have problems, I need help, you still have to wait a very long time to get help, because there are still not enough healthcare professionals for psychology and therapy. That's the main issue.
Working issue is poised to revolutionize that. It's poised. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but I think the fact that, you know, we're on Zoom calls, everyone went to telehealth here, and they were taking all of their, like, from their regular doctor's appointments to their psychiatry appointments all over the internet. I think moving to a place where that is the norm and that becomes acceptable, and insurances hopefully, you know, obviously have to pay for it, but I think we're seeing sort of the possibilities. I obviously am pessimistic that it'll necessarily come to fruition, but there is a future that could happen where, you know, if you live in rural areas, you actually have access to a ton of healthcare providers, whereas all the healthcare providers in the United States, they're centered in urban centers. And as you start to get out towards the rural areas, you're getting prescriptions for like antipsychotics or whatever from your local family medicine doctor. And it is weird.
I will say also that I think like professional help treatment is obviously something that is needed in some cases. But it's also important to remember that the awareness of issues of mental health doesn't necessarily lead to professional help for everything in all cases. I think there's a lot of, you know, the considering mental health in the same way that you consider body health, in that, you know, you exercise and you pay attention to what you eat, maybe, and, you know, it's just self-care. And in the case of mental health, it can be, okay, I need to take breaks. I shouldn't work nonstop all the time, or I should make sure that I, you know, go do something fun every once in a while. That kind of realization, of course, not discarding the importance of, you know, socialized medicine and professional help, but noting that that's step two, I feel, or one of the two steps you have to take. The other is also very important.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's talk about the other fun topic. I haven't made a decision on how I feel on the first one yet, so let's do the second one. Afghanistan. Where to even begin? I'll start here. My wife, as I think many other people in the world, were very depressed at what happened in the past couple of weeks. Very depressed. And the way she summarized it, like the most important thing to come out of it, out of obviously, you know, not discounting the issues that the Afghan people themselves are facing and are going to have to face for the foreseeable future, is the fact that no one will trust the US again. And that might be surprising as a takeaway for some, but it's kind of...
Wait, they trusted them in the first place?
There was, yes, you know, as cynical as people can be, there's still the feeling that the U.S. not quite can be trusted, but at least will act in it the interest of it and its allies. And what it feels like now is they're going to say something and they're going to... I don't know. I cynical people are going to say, "Oh, but you could never trust the U.S. to begin with," and what kind of idiot are you that you did? But I think that's a loaded view. I think there is. I'm not going to get into that. It did exist, that sentiment that, well, if they say something, they're going to stick to it, and at least you can, because this is. Here's where it comes from for my wife and for some people. I think it is a sentiment that is stronger for some people who are in certain situations. And for my wife and people in Finland, it relates, of course, as do most things in the geopolitical arena, to Russia. Because if the US shows up and stands its ground, then you can trust that at least the US will you know, stand up to Russia. And if they don't, as they have withdrawn from Afghanistan, there's always the danger that Russia poses is that little bit bigger. And so I've been talking about this on and off on the show, but Finland is in the process of buying something like 60 fighter planes, which is a ridiculous amount for the size of the country. But that is to make sure that, you know, you carry a big stick, even when you speak softly with Russia. And of course, it's not for Russia. It's not, oh, no, of course. You know, it's just, well, we need a strong defense just in case. Who knows? And now there was a discussion about getting American planes or... I think France was in the running as well, and Sweden is also in the running. And it seems like now American planes are out of the conversation, or will be, because you can't trust them to, you know, do things like send the spare parts. And, like, you don't know. You just don't know. You just can't trust them. And, of course, Sweden has a vested interest in making sure that Finland doesn't become Russia, because then Russia is at the door of Sweden. So in that way, you can trust them a little bit more. But so, not to discount the importance of what's happening in Afghanistan for Afghanistan, of course, this is kind of, I think, a feeling that is felt in a lot of places. And the debacle of the retreat from Afghanistan is, you know, there's...
But what is the debacle of the retreat? Is it the retreat or is it how it's happening? Like, what should be in... Like, in your wife's mind, like, what should be the path forward? Is it America colonizes, you know, or I would maybe want people would say continues to colonize Afghanistan? Like, what should we be doing differently?
So that's the interesting thing, right? Because there's no easy, good solution. And I think the argument, the logical argument is, well, America went in to get bin Laden. And that was the goal. It's not like Iraq, where the going in was, you know, at the very least questionable. Afghanistan was justified. It was hosting. You have to remember, and it's crazy that some people might listen to this show and not have been alive when it happened. But, you know, the 9/11 attack was something that could not go unanswered. And so, of course, that happened, and Afghanistan was where he was, and so the country was invaded, essentially, or the war started. And the reality is, if you stay, it's essentially nation building, which is a fancy word of saying colonizing, right? But not really, but it's nation building. But the thing is, I think the those things are both true, and no one wants a country to be colonized nowadays. Well, not no one, but you see my meaning. But the reality of it is, if you go in, even if it is to get bin Laden, then you have to stay. Not for 10 years, not for 20 years. You have to stay for 50 years. And once you're certain things are stable and you have built a functioning democracy, then you can leave. And of course, there's no guarantee that you can build a functioning democracy. And we've seen how it's gone in, you know, all many different places. But still,
this went in less than a month.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. So what's your take on it? Because what I'm seeing is it might be biased, but I'm seeing a lot of people very unhappy with Biden and specifically for this move.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone wants to. This is everyone's unhappy. Like that's in the end. It's like if we stay, we're unhappy, and if we leave, we're unhappy. I don't know. Like, I really don't know. And I try to sift through the political BS that is mired in with the news, and try and figure it out. And the best that I can tell is this is a problem that was created, you know, basically in, you know, right after 9/11 when our government, our Congress gave the president carte blanche to go to war forever with no oversight. Like there's nothing. And we've been there doing these things ever since with no, you know, realm of, you know, no like possibility or even thought of really stopping it. And there was an article, and I don't particularly like this newspaper, but the New York Post, which is fairly right-leaning, had a sort of editorial by a general sort of talking about what went over there. And basically his point was that he suggested that we should have had a tax like from the beginning and funded the war through a tax on the American public and keep the American public actually essentially connected and paying directly for this so that there's some level of accountability. So there is the realm of we should have gotten out of this sooner, or no matter what we made the choices that we made in that first year have made this inevitable and had made the exit as horrible as what's happening now, pretty much what was going to happen.
Hmm. So
I don't know, just to quickly address what your concept, or not concept, but the statement of like 50 years, like, I don't know. That sounds scary as crap. And it's like, okay, how do we choose between going back in time and fixing how we got here or waiting 50 years and hope that we meet some threshold that no one can even define?
Yeah. Well, we're already 20 years in, so there was only 30 left. It would have been very easy. but yeah, I mean, honestly, seeing how it's evolved in the past 20 years, I don't know that 30 more would have helped, and that's also the reality of the situation. But one thing that's interesting in what you're saying is, and it's really obvious, but I'm wondering how the perception of this is in the U.S. It's a money issue, right? Like the war, the continued occupation is costing a lot of money, and that's what's prompting the withdrawal.
I wouldn't say it's a money issue. I think the The comment about putting a tax, I mean, obviously you have to pay for this, but it's the, I think the comment of that this general made about taxing the American public specifically for the war is to keep them connected and keep them caring about it. And that's the thing. One of the YouTubers I watch, every now and then for an interesting perspective on this is like, what is it? Bo of the Fifth Column. Who's a bit of an anarchist, an ex-military contractor. He talks about the inevitability of this. And he describes it as, he never says Afghanistan. He just says over there. And that pretty much defines how the American public thinks about it, but we're not connected to it. And it's over there. And we see our losses. And I think the American public sees our losses in terms of dead American soldiers. And not necessarily in money, although I'm sure some think about the money of how much money we're pouring into, other worlds instead of, giving money to other countries instead of spending it on ourselves when we have problems of our own, that sort of thing.
Matthias, how's it talked about in Germany?
Actually, I have a question for you, or better, actually, I have a question for your wife, but since she isn't here, I have to ask you. Because you said that people in Finland and other countries are now afraid that the US won't be there for them. And is that really something new, though? Because if I think back to the last 20 years, that's not really a new sentiment, is it? Remember that, at least, I don't know for Finland, but at least for Germany and France, remember that Donald Rumsfeld called that the old Europe and the one you don't rely on and the one who doesn't matter anymore. So is that really something that's just now obvious?
I don't think it's a precise sentiment. It's not like, oh, there is this thing that will happen and this thing happened and in this case they did this. But there's the feeling, maybe especially here where you're so close to Russia still, and I'm talking to a German about this, but during the Cold War, the US was very much, it's interesting, I've been listening to a fascinating series, it's in French, about the 80s, and there is a big part on Ronald Reagan and how he approached the fight, the Cold War, and the fight against communism. And that, I think, is still, it can't leave the mind of some people in certain age groups, I guess. And it was the US versus, the USSR. And so in that context, if something happens, there is the sentiment that the international community, probably led by the UN and the US, actually would not let something happen, even if it might have been contradicted anecdotally here and there. In the past 20, 30, 50 years. It's not like we think, oh, we can, golly gee, it's so great that we have the US by our side because we can always count on our good friends in America. That's not the kind of naive sentiment. But the withdrawal from Afghanistan is like, when people were going in, everyone was thinking, well, this is going to be a shit show. And once you put your finger in it, you can't take it out because then the floodgates open. And I don't know, man. You're it's just the way.
Sorry, I didn't want to spoil the mood again.
An analogy here, though. Like, is there this sentiment, like, I don't know, this is horrible, but like, like the U.S. is some sort of alcoholic dad who's sober now, but it's that, like, are they gonna go back to their old ways or they've just been unreliable, or maybe they're a deadbeat dad and it's just like, we don't trust them and we keep hoping and we're not gonna let go of that relationship, but we are also resentful of that relationship at the same time.
I wouldn't go that far. I think there's a sentiment in Europe that is very anti-American, because of what we've learned, you know, all of the real politics things and the things that the NSA and CIA, right, and all those, you know, manipulations and things. When it came out, when it became more clear, maybe in the 90s and around that time, that this was happening.
Okay, so you're talking like Cold War era stuff versus, yeah, like Snowden era stuff.
Yeah, Cold War era. But I guess Snowden factors into it as well. But I think it eroded the trust in the U.S. to an unreasonable extent in some people. And I think, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, Matthias, but I feel like you're of the opinion that, well, you can never trust the U.S. about anything for anything, and fuck them, kind of. Maybe I editorialized a little bit at the end there. But I think that is an it goes to the other extreme. Obviously, you can't trust them for everything all the time, but also, it's not like they're this big evil empire, to use another Reagan phrase, but it's not like they're completely evil and they do things just to be bad and they only love money and they shower.
We don't do anything to be bad, right? We just do things in our interest, which maybe aligns with yours.
Exactly. And it feels like in this case, it is so condemning the Afghan people, like. It's almost objectively immoral, if that makes sense. And again, this is me, you know, it's like, yes, it's an impossible situation. Yes, it wasn't the goal when you first started this war. And yes, if you stay, you might have to stay for 30 years. But if you leave, this is what happens. And this is like factual. Yeah. This is what happens. And people are going to die and be victimized. And so even though that choice is very difficult, the consequences, you know them before you withdraw. And you still decide to withdraw, and the consequences are what they are. So you bear some responsibility for it. I don't know if that makes it, you know, more clear or better or worse, but that's why it feels worse than other things that Matthias might have, you know, might be thinking about.
I really just want to know, from my perspective, as like, okay, our president made this choice essentially again, right? Like, he could have reversed Trump's decision, his deadline, all of that. And I really want to know, and we probably won't know until after he's out of office and writes a book or whatever. I want to know what the conversation was of, like, and why, like, what is the decision of, like, why not stay? And is it because, well, the hard decision was already made and we all know this is the right decision, quote unquote, but it's just not the politically convenient decision to make, but Trump made it, so we're gonna just not do anything about it.
I mean, it is Biden's decision to not reverse it, right? He could.
I know, but I totally agree.
It falls on his head. But yeah, Matthias,
But when it comes to the, you mentioned the opinion on the U.S. from a European perspective, and I think it's an up and down and up and down a bit. But what's different from the Cold War era is the looming threat of the Soviet Union and the U.S. as your last line of defense when it comes to protecting against the U.S. Because even during the Cold War, there were a lot of times. There. Sorry?
You said protecting against the U.S., which I thought was a lovely Freudian slip.
Okay. All right. Well, against the USSR. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. So, but even during the Cold War, even when you had this positive so-called aspect that the US will always be there to defend you. There were always times when people were had low opinion on the US, for example, during Vietnam and stuff like that.
Of course.
But since the Cold War ended, this background sympathy, I don't know how to call it, but this last line is no longer there. And since it's a complicated and changing world, it's always an up and down. So during George W. Bush's reign, it was a low point. Then Obama came, it was a bit better. Then Trump came, low point. And now with Biden, it's getting a little bit better. But it's always an up and down for me, at least. And that's not necessarily only the Democrat-Republican line, dividing line for some people. That might be, but in this case, it's mostly that the policies are different in this regard. And the mission in Afghanistan was never a very popular one in Germany, but it was. But at least this one we took part in. And then you remember when in 2003, when the US invaded Iraq, Germany and France said, "No, we don't join you in this mission." That's why I
said earlier it's very different from Iraq. The Afghanistan was justified in the eyes of many people, whereas Iraq was, well, as we've learned with certainty afterwards, was absolutely not. I don't know. I think it's more, as we've established, I think it's more difficult to have a final opinion on it than it is when you have your gut reaction. But what I end on when I think about it is, you know, there was military presence, and the withdrawal of that presence is having the consequences that we've seen, and that is inescapable. So, and that, you know, I mean, you know, it's easy for me to say now. If I was asked, you know, would you give up this to save the Afghan people? I would be like, well, yes, cool. Just, I can, you know, I don't get a new, it's a completely random thing, but like if you give up your comfort, like your next iPhone, you don't get it and the Afghan people are safe. Okay, cool. And then it's like, okay, but now there are issues in this country and that, like you can't save everyone. I don't know where I'm going with this, but it feels like it's easy to get not outraged, that's not to get despaired over this when I don't have stakes, I guess. Like, I don't know. All right, let's talk about, do you guys have other topics that you want to bring up before we finish the show?
I wanted to add something.
Oh, go ahead.
Because it's interesting that you, as a Frenchman, are actually so positive about the US, because historically France wasn't very keen on working with the US in, I remember de Gaulle and all of that. So it's just interesting that you are so positive.
I think I'm more realistic than many people are. That's how I like to think of myself. But, you know, France not being a friends of the US is certainly has some truth to it. But also, like, I could end the sentence there. But also, like, we work with the US all the time. We have a lot of exchanges. Like, I think that about Germany,
your people,
right?
And your government, right?
Yeah, not even, like, there's this like latent sentiment that, oh, the Americans, the US, and then you listen to American rap, you watch American movies, you're permeated by the culture that you appreciate. It's not like, oh, they're invading us and we hate them. It's like, yeah, the kids who will, you know, spit on America, maybe they don't do that, but then they'll turn around and listen to, I don't know who the kids listen to these days, but American rappers.
And,
I was gonna say like The Weeknd and you know, the I don't know, R. Kelly. Valid. Is that 10 years ago?
Oh, Oh, bad these days. Very bad. Yeah,
okay. Jay-Z and Doja Cat and, you know, that kind of people. yeah, so I don't know. I think it's easy to hate America and to maybe put a bow on it. It's easy to hate America, but you wouldn't want it gone. Like, you know, if it wasn't there, things wouldn't be as. And again, you were talking about De Gaulle, Matthias. You know, when he showed up in, you know, when he gained prominence in the French political scene, he wouldn't have been there without the U.S. And I think that is something that some of those people are happy to forget until they need to remember it. Yeah. I don't know. I'll be curious to see how Biden is remembered. Maybe he was like, okay, let's do it early in the presidency. We have to do it. Otherwise, we'll be there for 50 years. Let's do it now. And within the like midterms, we'll have done something else that people will like. So.
Yeah, we have very short memories.
Mm. How about another topic, if you have one? I'm spent personally. Like, I think that's the difference with even a couple of years ago and when you were on the show, John, before. It's like thinking about all of these things takes up all of our energy. and it's like you have COVID and Afghanistan and the threat of Russia, which is deteriorating, and Navalny being, you know, taken away, and you have China, which is reverting to some things, and you have like the sexual harassment issues in the video games industry, which is world shattering as well for some people. And like, it's
I meant to ask you about that, but we won't talk about it.
Yeah, let's not. I've spent like 2 weeks talking about it on Twitter and on all of my shows. Go listen to Pixels if you want to know what I think about it.
And on top of all of this, there's also the threat of climate change.
Oh, so right.
All right. Come on. Come on. You know,
that was part of it, of course, Matthias. Like, it's completely part of it. And it's not even the threat.
It has been in the news so much the last few months. I mean, here in Germany, we had the huge floodings. There are wildfires all over the place. Siberia is burning. The North Pole is darkened by smoke from Siberia. There was the hottest ever recorded temperature in, was it Italy? Or I think it was Sicily, yeah. And like the U.S. is wildfires in the U.S., flooding in the U.S., hurricane.
Okay, my Haiti. Blood pressure is spiking.
Yeah. So
I have a local story.
There you go.
In my local town, I just read an article because I was like, all right, what's actually going on locally? And I just read that a company called Pet Suites is opening up a new building or whatever operation in our town. And so we're getting a big like boarding daycare and training facility for our pets. we need it because I could talk more at this length privately or separately or wherever, but the it's been very interesting to watch the impact, the actual mental health impact on our pets that COVID has had. Us being around more, they become more nervous. They've become like, if we leave at all, like they start freaking out and barking like they never had before, stuff like that. So we've got to start getting them more used to being away from us. And as we start to get back to some level of normal, so I'm looking forward to not having to watch them nonstop and have them yell at me. Literally, one of them is just taken to screaming at me all day. That's it, all day long.
That sounds incredibly familiar from 3 years ago with my son. I'm trying to think.
Except this doesn't go away.
Right.
I mean, a shorter lifespan, sure, but they don't grow up.
That does make sense. Yeah, I thought it was going to be a positive thing. I guess it isn't.
I know, it just went turned back around. No, but it's a good thing.
Yeah,
it's pets. Yay. We're going to get them out of the house. They're going to see other dogs. They're going to socialize more. It's going to be
fantastic.
Great.
Fantastic.
Interesting question, though, because that has been a news report over here a lot. Did you guys also have, in your respective countries, the trend that since everyone was at home and in lockdown and working from home, that a lot of people got pets and now they want to get rid of them?
Come on, man.
I thought you were going to stop after a lot of people got pets and they're so happy and it's helping their mental health.
No.
The euthanasia rates have spiked. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, come on.
I
this is the most fatalistic conversation I've ever had.
All right, Matthias, now your job is to find one good thing to say to end the show.
Yes.
I have another thing, but I'm not sure if it's positive. Well, it's positive. If you like podcasts, I have a podcast you could listen to. It's not a fun topic, but at least you have a new podcast to listen to.
Okay, let's go with that.
You might remember that in 2017, there was a news report about a German army officer posing as a refugee and planning to commit terrorist attacks in order to undermine the society and destabilize the political system. But before he could execute his plans, he got arrested because he had stashed a gun at an airport and that was found accidentally. And we even briefly talked about this here on the show back when it was broke the news. But since it was only very fresh back then, there weren't many details known. But in May this year, the trial of this officer has started, and the New York Times actually launched a podcast about him. His terrorist plot and the surrounding far-right scene, and even got to interview him and talk to him about what he was planning. So if you're interested in hearing more about this, you could check it out. It's called Day X, and you can probably find it wherever you listen to podcasts. And it's in English, so if you want to hear more about this, that might be a new podcast you can listen to.
Day X.
Yes, because the Day X, the prepper scene and the terrorist group over here was planning for a supposed Day X where everything bad would happen, like the government would fall and everything, and that's their event they were planning for. So the New York Times took that as their title for the podcast.
All right, Day X. You know what? I also have a podcast to recommend, and it's in keeping with my... my pushing of the idea that facts matter and that you need to be knowledgeable about what is actually happening. The podcast is called, and I forgot the name of the podcast. Damn it. Wait a second. I'll find it. I'll find it right now. I'm finding it right now. It is called Rationally Speaking. It's a really great show, and I would recommend in particular the episode about Uber and Lyft that has three interviews with different people who have studied the topic and whether or not the companies are exploiting the drivers or not. And it's really fascinating because it doesn't go at it with an angle. It explores its biases very consciously and questions itself and, you know, the opinions of each person very openly. And I think that is the kind of mindset that we need and that we, you know, would benefit from, definitely. So, I would recommend you listen to Rationally Speaking, the podcast with Julia Galef is the researcher and book author that edits it. Rationally Speaking. All right. Unless anyone else has anything positive to say, there are good things in the world. There are many good things still. We're surviving. We'll make it. We have fun video games and movies and stuff. Watch Ted Lasso. I think if you haven't seen Ted Lasso.
Oh, so good.
Matthias, have you ever watched Ted Lasso?
Nope.
Okay. This is your assignment for whatever next time is. Watch Ted Lasso. It will make your life better.
Apple TV Plus, yes. Just to be aware.
You probably hate Apple. But
yes, because Apple is surveilling us. I hate Apple.
Yes, and so you use an Android device from Google who is not surveilling us. No, but I mean, if you find a way to get your hands on the Ted Lasso show, I assure you it will make your life better.
Yeah, okay, really. So describe it for everyone listening who doesn't know what Ted Lasso is.
I do not want to because it's better left as a surprise.
You could give the because the first episode, it's in the first 5 seconds, which is basically a coach. I don't even remember what he coached, but like a football coach who like had a big
American
comeback in the
football
United
coach.
Yep, American football coach.
Right.
Basically had this big comeback. It gets hired by a football team in the UK to be their new coach, and he's never even played in the American vernacular soccer, and comedy ensues.
And it's not the reason I don't want to describe the show is that some people might think, sports, I don't like it, you know, it's not for me, football, I don't care. I assure you the brilliance of the show has nothing to do with football. And it is, you know, I think it's the only show I've ever seen which makes you feel good.
It's so positive.
It's not funny. Like, it's not going to amuse you like a comedy would and you'll feel better because you're laughing. That's not what it is. It makes you feel good. Like, you feel happy when you watch it. Please watch Ted Lasso. Right? John, like, all you right. agree, it's
yes.
incredible.
Yes, absolutely. I did not know what to expect. I watched it because it was like 27 Emmys or something ridiculous. And I was like, okay, what's happening? And I binged the first season straight into the second season. It was so good.
All right, so Matthias, we'll be waiting to see what you think if you manage to watch it.
All right.
And that's going to be it for the show. Thank you so much, John and Matthias, for being with me and keeping me somewhat sane. If we want to find you on the internet, where would we go? I'm going to ask John first.
I mean, I don't even hardly use like Twitter or any of the social networks anymore other than occasional Facebook for some stuff. But I will plug one thing. In my spare time, I am producing and editing and also being on it. My wife's YouTube channel, which is about smart dolls, which are basically like 2 foot tall anime like doll slash action figures.
Okay.
That is My Lady Disdain on YouTube. It's really interesting stuff. If you're interested in anime or dolls or collecting stuff, whatever. We did a whole Supergirl unboxing thing there. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, cool. My Lady Disdain on YouTube. Excellent.
Yep.
Thank you, John. What about you, Matthias?
If you want to talk to me about all the stuff that is fine, you can find me on Twitter at Matzekult, MatzeKult. And if you're using Mastodon, you can find me under the same handle on this instance, chaos.social.
Perfect. Aptly named also. Chaos.social. For me, it's not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But most of all, if you want to support the show, you can do so on Patreon. Patreon.com/TheFiliasClub is where you would go. The people who do that have shown, according to independent verified studies, a significant increase in happiness for supporting cool content, maybe. That might not be true.
Oh, you had it there. You're so close.
Almost, almost.
You just had to commit to it all the way to the end.
But if you do it, I guarantee that you might not regret it. Patreon.com/TheFiliusClub. This is how the show is put together, is financed. This is how I eat and feed my children. So if you appreciate what we do here, Patreon.com/TheFiliusClub. Thank you so much, and we will be back, hopefully, in a few weeks. Talk to you then. Bye.